Hello, and welcome to episode 104 of Movies and Us. I'm TJ.
And I'm Marcus.
And this is the review chat, review genre movies from the beginning, sometimes. You know, that kind of fits with these three movies that we covered, because we did cover them from the beginning.
I mean, everything you've picked, TJ, is fit because you always pick a genre series. We go from the beginning to the end.
That's true. But to be fair, you put the 100th episode on me, so...
Yeah, and you picked a series of movies.
Well, no.
And we ended up liking them so much. We're like, yeah, let's keep going with this.
Yeah, that's what happened. Don't try and say I picked all three. That's not what happened.
No, but you do... You are a person who's like a completionist and like, pick more than one of the thing.
I am a completionist. Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing, but like these have been your flavors, I guess.
Yeah, but they're good, so.
That's fair.
Today, we are covering the final in the Dollar Trilogy in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yay! Which is a prequel, in a way, too.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, honestly, this could have just been... I mean, it's only a prequel in the fact that because it takes place during the Civil War. You could just... If you took that aspect, this could fit anywhere.
I mean, we see him get his poncho in this movie.
That's true.
But yeah, in general, this movie, like, I don't even think all, you can watch any of these three in any order, honestly.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's not one of those kind of series.
This movie was released, it says December 23rd, 1966, so I'm going to go with that. Because I don't know if that's the American release, or if it's the original Italian release, or...
Yeah,
that's
I don't...
But it only has one release date, and it doesn't say in Italy like it did in the other ones, so...
That would make sense then, because, you know, 1, 2, 3, and they take some time to make.
The movie is dependent on which version you watched. An hour, what was yours? An hour 50?
An hour?
2 hours and 50.
Eight, there we go. 2 hours 58. I wish it was an hour 58. No, I don't.
That's 2 hours and 58 minutes for the Italian version, and the version I watched was an hour 40, 2 hours and 41 minutes. This movie was directed by Sergio Leone. It's screenplay by, it's either Age or Age and Scarpelli. So, I guess that's a brand? I don't know. Age and Age and Scarpelli are those two comedians that they put into this movie. I'll talk about them.
What comedians?
In a behind-the-scenes part, they hired, the guy who did the screenplay, Luciano Vincenzoni.
Yeah.
Because Luciano Vincenzoni, Age, and Scarpelli and Sergio Leone are credited for the screenplay. But he suggested that Sergio Leone worked with Age and Scarpelli, I'm assuming it's Age, on it for more comedic tone.
Yeah.
But apparently they used only one line from everything that they wrote because it was terrible.
I saw that. Okay.
So, yeah. But apparently it was enough to get on a credit. So, there you go.
I mean, that's good enough, I guess, right?
I mean, they did write something.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's other people who write stuff that gets used and they don't get credited. But
no, that's fair.
Anyway, the story was by Luciano Vincenzoni and Sergio Leone. It was produced by Alberto Grimaldi. This movie stars Clint Eastwood, who got $250,000 and 10% of the North American markets for this movie.
That's good money.
Which... The Leone was not happy about.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that in the behind the scenes stuff, but he refused. That's what they had to offer him to get to do this movie.
Really?
Yep.
Maybe, okay.
Then it also stars Eli Wallach. I think that's his name, Wallach. And Lee Van Cleef returns as well. It also stars Al Mulick, Aldo Giaffarre, Aldo Sombrella, Benito Stefanelli, Antonio Casale, Livio Lorenzo, Enzo Petito, John Bartha.
Enzo Petito, Enzo Tiny. That's cute. Tiny Enzo, get over. That's a great mafia name.
Is that what Petito means?
I mean, I was petite, right? So it's like a form of petite.
That's his last name, so.
A very small family. Pint-sized family. Okay, I'm sorry, continue.
John Bartha, I think. Jose Terron, Lorenzo Robledo, Luigi Pistilli, Mario, really, Luigi and Mario, right on the ring.
Only you would pick up on that.
Mario Brega, Antonio Molina Roja, Rada Rasamov, Jesus Guzman?
Guzman? I would say Guzman, right?
Well, the A's got an umlaut over it, so I'm Guzman, I think. Ricardo Palacios? Lassos. It's weird because it's got a C instead of an S.
Yeah.
Antonio Casas and Antonito Ruiz.
Oh my God. Look at the Roman. Next one. What? Yeah. So say that last name.
Okay. Roman R. Ariz Navarrete.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Ariz Navarrete.
Ariz Navarrete. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Ariz Navarrete, I actually think it is.
No, Navarrete. I see that Retta, yeah.
Yeah, because it's Ariz Navarrete. Yeah.
Ariz or Ariz? Ariz?
It could be Ariz Navarrete.
Yes, Ariz Navarrete. That's a name. That's a solid name.
We would have to have him say it for us to know for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sergio.
I'm never picking a foreigner film because there's no way I'm going to say these names ever correctly. Mendy?
Mendizabal? I have trouble with the umlaut A's because it's not, it's not ah. It's like, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. Yeah.
It's Mendizabal. I think it's Mendizabal. Yeah.
Mendizabal.
Because it's, I think it's like a hard consonant A rather than like a short A.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that was who's in it. You want to do box office or behind the scenes?
Let's get box office away because not much behind the scenes we'll talk about, I guess.
So this movie had a budget of $1.2 million and made $38.9 million worldwide.
$38.9 million worldwide. That's the numbers you got. I don't know. The thing I'm looking at, it does not really adjust for it. So it gets it at number 26-ish in the worldwide box office, I guess, kind of, for 1967. Because, you know, old school movies, listings weren't accurate. God, what do I say, TJ? Because every time we say these movies, it's the same year. Again, that year's number one was The Graduate, followed by The Jungle Book and Gone with the Wind.
So I think we've been avoiding 26 to 20 because of this movie.
Have we?
Yeah.
So I guess the 26 was this movie.
Yes.
At 25, The Taming of the Shrew. Felt sexist as shit.
I know that. I never saw it, but I know that name.
I have never heard that before in my life.
The Taming of the Shrew, yeah, I've heard that. That's a popular one from what I heard.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe it might be based on a book, though, so maybe that's why.
Oh, possibly?
I've definitely heard of that one before, though.
Of all the movies.
I mean, yeah.
Look at Elizabeth Taylor in it. Brutus, fortune-hunting scoundrel. That's a name. Petruchio. Tames his wealthy, shrewish wife, Katrina. That seems so sexist, right?
I mean, it's 1967.
Yeah. Oh, Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, another famous old names. How long is it? 2 hours? No, thank you. At number 24, 1 million years BC.
Wasn't there a movie named that, like, in the last decade?
There's Year One of Jack Black. There's another one. I think you know what you're talking about. Like, it's like prehistoric shit. 500 BC, I think it's called, or something like that. But yeah.
I thought, that's why I thought of it. I don't even know what that is.
The one I just mentioned, like, the 1 million year BC is probably biblical bullshit.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Oh, 23, Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, the original?
I want to say, wouldn't you, Jerry?
It's 1967. It's got to
Well, there's a few of them. I know Jerry Lewis had one.
I guess it could be a remake of a black and white flubber one.
That's what I'm trying to say, because Dr. Doolittle, the original one.
Who's in that one?
Okay, yeah, this one. Yeah, this one's different. Shit. Well, this one talks to animals. This one stars Rex Harrison, Samantha Eggar, Anthony Newley, and Richard Attenborough. Oh, fucking no way. That's the guy from Jurassic Park, the old guy, the man who makes the park. Wow. Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's 2.5 hours long. No, thank you. Jesus Christ. Why are movies always so long? At number 22, we have Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
I'm assuming it's Disney.
Yeah, it's a re-release, I guess, because the original one came out.
It's got to be the re-release, because the original Snow White came out in the 30s.
44.
40s?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because I know it was Snow White, and I don't think it was either Pinocchio or Dumbo.
Wait, which one the first one? Was this the first one, or was...
Snow White is the first Disney animated feature, yeah.
Wow. Oh, so it came out during the war, huh?
Yeah.
Was Disney founded during the war?
No, Steamboat Willie was 26.
Oh, wow. Disney's that old.
What number are we on?
Snow White's number 22 and number 21. In Like Flint. In Lake Flint.
In Lake Flint? That name sounds vaguely familiar.
It sounds like I know that term, but I never heard of the movie. It's a good up, I guess. We're going a lot of tangents for a movie like this.
Yeah.
I wonder what that means. In Lake Flint, super spy Flint takes on a cabal of women plotting to rule the world.
Huh. Yeah, 2 hour so movie. Of course, this is sexist.
Yeah. It doesn't, it must be a comedy, I want to say. I kind of want to watch it.
Sounds like it would be like a comedy. Yeah. I could see it being like a, what was, like a Leslie Nielsen spy.
It stars James Coburn. What was he in? The Great Escape, Charade, Magnificent Seven, Cross of Iron. Yeah, but it does feel like a Leslie Nielsen.
I forget what those movies are called. Spy something.
Oh, God. I love those movies, TJ.
I don't remember what they're called now.
Not I Spy. I think it's called Spy.
No.
I know he does Police Squad. I love the Police Squad series. Airplane series. Naked Gun.
Naked Gun, there.
Yeah. Love those. Those are such good movies. Like, they make me forget that OJ's a bad person. That's how much I love those movies.
Do you like the Police Academy movies?
The first few, yeah. They just get, like, you know, repetitive.
I was just curious. It seems like, if that's the kind of comedy you're into.
I like old school comedies. I'm not gonna lie.
Like the 80s Bill Murray movies.
Bill Murray. Oh, like, I wouldn't call 48 Hours a comedy, but...
I mean,
oh,
Bill Murray. That's Eddie Murphy and...
Yeah. Nick Nolte. What's a Bill Murray? I don't like Caddyshack. I hate that movie. Movies like that, where you, like, when it's obvious they're just fucking around to have fun, which is cool, have fun, guys, but, like, where's the story?
I mean, obviously, Ghostbusters is the most obvious one, but Groundhog Day.
That's a classic, yeah. Yes.
There's one I'm trying to think of specifically, though. It's like an army movie. I can't remember off the top of my head what it's called.
Oh, Stripes.
Stripes. Yeah, there it is.
Meatballs, the camp one. Yeah, no, I do enjoy his movies. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got that Bill Murray era. Oh, that's right. He was in Little Shop of Horrors. That's right.
Yeah. There was a comedy I was watching recently. I was just still laughing at it. It was like years later, like, wow, this just holds up still. Yeah, no, a lot of, there's so many movies that are just can't be made anymore. Just.
What About Bob?
Love that movie. My sister and I quit that all the time. Baby Steps. Come on, TJ.
Doctor. I mean, I don't think he was in that, but him, it was him and Dan Aykroyd. Who was in Trains, Planes, and Automobiles besides
John Candy?
Besides John Candy. Who did he act
next? Steve Martin.
Steve Martin. That's.
But no, that movie still holds up. Oh my God, so good.
Yeah. There's some great comedies back then, man.
And they don't do it anymore because, you know, it's not money. Because can't make money out of. Trust me, I talked about this with my sister all the time too. Like how movies have just gone so downhill because they've got to be either content or like sequel bait bullshit. Mm-hmm. If they make a comedy, they either go too raunchy with it. It's like, wow, this is fun.
Scrooged.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite telling of the Christmas story.
Not mine, but it's like up there.
No, not yours.
No, mine.
As the Muppet.
Actually, no, but that one's up there too. Yeah, mine's actually the Mickey Mouse one.
I don't think I've seen it as a kid. Probably, I don't recall
like,
that one.
It's like a half hour.
Oh wow!
And it's just Disney characters. It's
okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh yeah.
What number are we on?
Yeah, sorry. There's definitely the 80s, 70s. Like those comedies are like these tickle my funny bone.
That whole era of movie making
was inspired. Magic.
Yeah.
That's my biggest compliment about the movie we just watched. We're going to review eventually here. It's like, it's very inspired. Like, this is nice.
Yeah.
Maybe because the show, it's original. And like, I've watched so many of these old movies that now when I see new movies do this stuff, like, oh, they're just borrowing from that. It's like, you're not inspired. So it's like, yeah. I guess, okay, number 20. Divorce American Style.
No idea what that is.
But it sounds like a comedy too, right? Like it cannot not be a comedy.
I mean, it's the 60s. It could be very much a serious movie.
It could be. What's that movie I made you watch that wasn't good?
There was a lot of them.
The one from the 60s that we both just like, this is...
In the Heat of the Night?
No. The one's very stylish. Images. Yeah. Oh, this one, Divorce American Style. It's got Dick Van Dyke and Debbie Reynolds stars a suburban couple who learn that not even divorce can solve all their problems.
That doesn't sound like a comedy. It sounds like a romantic comedy.
Yeah, I would watch that, though. Yeah.
Not if it's over an hour and a half, you wouldn't.
It's an hour 40. That's the box office, by the way. TJ, back to you.
There was a question you asked me off screen, but I don't remember what it was.
The question was, oh, yeah, because this is like the prequel.
Uh-huh.
/ sequel, and they reused some of the actors, like at least one actor, I guess, not counting Clint Eastwood, right? They used one reactor. I thought they used multiple. I know they reused, what's his name?
Lee Van Cleef.
Yeah, Lee Van Cleef.
He's the only one playing. I think he's the only one playing a different character than his other character.
Yeah. Do you think there's? Do you have any reason why that they talk about it on the scenes?
Yeah, because he wanted Charles Bronson again, and he couldn't get him, so he went to. He just asked Van Cleef to do it again, and Van Cleef actually joked, "They only brought me back because they forgot to kill me in the last movie." So yeah, I mean it's. But I was telling you off screen that Eastwood got into.
Oh.
Did not like him. Stop doing movies with Leone because he didn't like working with him.
Now, is it because of the whole he made lots of money and Leone didn't like him for that, or just professionalism, or like chaos?
No, he was one of those. Directors that had to have everything perfect.
Yeah.
So he was just overbearing, and yes. Clint Eastwood didn't like it. Clint Eastwood doesn't come off like as the most supportive guy either. Like he was worried that there was 3-star actors in role and was afraid they were gonna upstage him and stuff. So
I mean, he's an actor, so that makes sense.
So it's like, get over it. Who cares? It's a movie.
But at the same time, if the director's too overbearing, like Stanley Kubrick was famous for like doing hundreds of takes for a shot, I think that would break me as an actor. Like, we have it. Let's move on because this is ridiculous now. So, like, I get, but also I get, like, as a director, they have a vision and they want that thing properly put to screen. So I get that too.
Yeah, but like, he would do like apparently dozens of reshoots.
Yeah.
Like, one of those guys, like, from different angles and shit.
Yeah.
So you got the perfect one.
And that costs money for a production. I know producers will step in like, nah, stop this.
So the exact thing is by the end of filming, Eastwood had finally had enough of Leone's perfectionist directorial traits. Leone insisted often forcefully on shooting scenes from many different angles, paying attention to the most minute details, which often exhausted the actors.
Yeah, that would drive me crazy as an actor.
Leone, who was obese, prompted amusement through his excesses, and Eastwood found a way to deal with his stresses of being directed by him by making jokes about him and nicknaming him Yosemite Sam for his bad temper.
Yosemite Sam.
After the film was completed, Eastwood never worked with Leone again, later turning down the role of Harmonica in Once Upon a Time in the West, for which Leone had personally flown to Los Angeles to give him the script.
Oh, wow.
The role was given to Charles Bronson.
Finally! Took him X amount of movies to make it happen.
Years later, apparently, Leone exacted his revenge on Eastwood during the filming of Once Upon a Time in America. I guess those two are related?
There's a few Once Upon a Time. There's Once Upon a Time in the West, America. There's one in Mexico. I think another director did it, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. So I would assume the first two you mentioned were probably related, but couldn't tell you.
Once Upon a Time in America, when he described Eastwood's acting abilities as being a block of marble wax and inferior to the acting abilities of Robert De Niro, saying that Eastwood moves like a sleepwalker between explosions and howls of bullets, and he is always the same, a block of marble. Bobby, first of all, is an actor, and Clint, first of all, is a star. Bobby suffers and Clint yawns. Eastwood later gave his poncho to a friend, apparently.
So what?
At the end of all that, they just throw a line in where Eastwood gave his poncho to a friend, and it was in a Mexican restaurant in California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so apparently there's a lot of strife.
I mean, that's Hollywood. It happens.
Yeah. Again, the movie opened a bad critical response. Because
people are dumb. I wonder, like, what movie, if now, like, open up to bad responses, is going to become just memorable.
That's
like that.
True.
Like, I think probably Star Wars will have a generation of like 7, 8, 9 are amazing. If it happens every time. Besides that,
I mean, like right today, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly has 97 on Rotten Tomatoes. So nowadays, it's like arguably one of the greatest spaghetti westerns ever. Apparently,
yeah.
So, but the one that I wanted to bring up was the Robert Ebert.
Oh, Robert Ebert. What about Robert Ebert?
So, critical opinion on the film was mixed, as many reviewers at the time looked down on spaghetti westerns in a negative. So,
I wonder why. Like, why would they look down? Just because it's different?
This guy, Ronaldo Adler, said it was the most expensive, pious, and repellent movie in the history of the peculiar genre. Some guy named Charles Chamblin wrote, "Temptation is hereby proved irresistible to call the good, the bad, and the ugly, now playing citywide, the bad, the dull, and the interminable, only because it is."
So no one likes critics, guys. But no one likes critics.
But Robert Ebert, who included this movie in his greatest movies list of all time,
yeah,
retrospectively noted that he originally gave described the movie as a 4-star movie, but gave it a 3 stars, perhaps because it was a spaghetti western, so it could not be art.
Yeah, see, I don't like that.
So yeah, at the time, he gave it 3 stars because it wasn't art, but as he grew and, you know, reevaluated, he's like, this is a one of the greatest movies in all time.
It's not art. And I get opinions change, but to come off saying something initially that's not art, that is art, isn't art, like, get off your high f***ing horse.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell the critics back in that time were very pretentious.
I mean, they're always pretentious. Like, if someone were made a movie and it's all TikToks, like, I would hate it. I would, like, this is a terrible gimmick I do not approve of. But I can still consider it art.
Yeah, I mean, art's subjective.
So. Exactly. And it could be a good story told, but, like, this gimmick is pissing me off.
I don't think there's anything else in the behind-the-scenes stuff that I wanted to talk about. There's a bunch of deleted scenes, apparently.
Yeah, like what? We don't care, do we?
No, but they're probably in your version and where I didn't see them.
Well, let's say them right now. What's the deleted scene?
Angel High stumbles upon an embattled Confederate outpost after a massive artillery bombardment.
Yep.
There. I didn't see that.
That's a mine. Yep. It's a good shot. I was like, okay, this is either the story.
After being betrayed by Blondie, surviving in the desert on his way to civilization and assembling a good revolver for parts worn out and guns, Tuco meets with members of his gang in a distant cave.
Yeah, I liked it. It was really good.
I didn't see that either.
Yeah, it was really good.
Like, he just had guys with him in my version.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. It was like, this is a good scene.
He severely tortures a severely dehydrated Blondie by eating and bathing in front of him.
Yep.
That wasn't in mine either.
Loved it. All these deleted scenes I really liked. Like, these are good scenes. Why would they get rid of him?
He finds a Confederate camp who tells him where Ramirez's monastery is nearby.
Yeah.
It's good.
They get rid of scenes that actually help the story, but they keep, like, you know, 10-minute shots of them running around. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I want you to run around this grave for, like, the next 3 minutes. You sure? Yes. But that scene just cut to the floor. It just was pivotal.
Are you sure he was running around and they just didn't spin the camera the entire time?
And then at the end, it's just right to the sunset. It's to keep the camera rolling for 5 minutes. You sure about that? Good scenes, whatever. Any other deleted scenes?
There's a bunch of them, but yeah. I don't want to go through all of them. They're like bullet points.
Yeah, that's fair. But they are good scenes.
And there's like a whole section about the legacy of the movie being reevaluated. There's a lot about, oh God, what's his name?
Tarantino, probably.
Tarantino talking about this movie.
Shocker. As I was watching it, like, I love this movie. So, spoiler, I love the movie. I love this movie so goddamn much. Like, I see the inspiration I gave to Tarantino, obviously. Oh, yeah. It's like,
he's like, this is the greatest movie of all time, apparently.
You can tell. You can tell he likes this because it's like, oh, yeah, this is definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's a few things in pop culture based off of this that's listed here. Number one on the list was Quentin Tarantino paid homage to the film in the standoff with the Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, yes. Everything Tarantino does is like an homage to this f***ing movie.
There's the one more thing that I wanted to mention behind the scenes that I was curious if you knew about.
What?
Apparently, there was a proposed sequel.
Yes, I was reading that, yeah. I did not know that beforehand.
Yeah, but apparently it was vetoed by Leone because he didn't want the characters to be reused. It's like, you reuse the characters all the time.
But, like, no, I approve of that, though. Like, I don't need a sequel to this.
Nah, I don't need a sequel, too, but he's like, he's notorious for reusing characters, yeah. So it's a stupid reason to not do it.
Well, like, they're his toys, though. You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah,
exactly. That's what it is. Like, these are mine. Like,
yeah, exactly. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it.
Okay.
And no, I don't have no trailers because apparently they don't put trailers on Western movies.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't have any trailers on any of these.
I guess you haven't, have you?
No. Like, it just, like, I started this movie up and it jumped right into the movie. It didn't even give me a menu. But yeah, so yeah, no trailers. I guess that's it for preamble.
That's it.
All right, are we ready to dive into it?
Sure.
All right, so
this movie sucked. No, I'm kidding.
So this movie is a movie. It does movie things. Now, the movie opens up like the last movie does. It introduces us to our cast of characters.
Yeah.
We get introduced to the good, the bad, and the ugly.
And a 10-minute sequence that has no audio, and I f***ing love it, TJ. Not audio, no dialogue.
Oh, the opening, yeah. Where we, it's just, if you think these guys are gonna show down, but no, they're actually teaming up to go in against this, the guy in the tavern? Is that what it's called? Or bar?
Wait, hold on, what? What guy?
The opening scene, where they, you think they're gonna face off against each other.
I'm saying the whole, like we don't get a dialogue until the bad talks.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean, though. So, but the whole opening, there's no dialogue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so they go in, and then we get introduced to him, and then we have the whole bad side of things, and that's just like 5 minutes of just quiet storytelling there, too.
It's so good. It's motivating. It's good.
But yeah, so we get introduced to our cast of characters. We got Clint Eastwood as the good guy, and they really want you... You think he's the good one by all the things he does.
Yeah, like he's the guy, guys. Like him.
And then the ugly is, I guess, technically Clint Eastwood's partner, Tuco.
Yeah.
Because he's won it, but Clint keeps collecting the money, and but keeps helping him escape afterwards.
Which is smart.
Yeah, I mean, if he just stayed away from the towns you ripped off.
Yeah, and war doesn't travel that quickly, right? Or if you keep doing your scam. So, like, it makes sense. But at the same time, would that make him good, though, now? Because he's, like, you know, working with
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. This guy is good after he just abandons his partner in the desert? What?
Right.
But no, apparently he comforts dying guys and does good deeds.
Yeah.
And that's why he's the good guy.
Yeah, he's got a heart.
And this is technically the prequel, so yes. This is him becoming the good. So we're just introduced to the characters, and then, you know, a bunch of shenanigans happens, essentially, where they're betraying each other and making each other suffer. But then they come across, Tuco comes across a runaway carriage that has this guy in it who knows the secret to gold, where some buried gold is. It's that's buried in a cemetery in a specific grave. I thought at first Angel Eyes, the bad in this, was the one that killed them.
You would think so, yeah.
So how did they die or not? Because Angel Eyes has nothing to do with this. He was still looking for them when we come back to him.
Yes. So it must have been like, you know, cool. Well, there's the unions and there's Confederates. So it must have been like a war thing. But yeah, I thought Angel Eyes got him too. Like, oh, Angel Eyes did this shit.
You would think, but they're in a carriage run away as if someone put them there like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That doesn't seem like a war-like thing you would do.
Well, I guess. Maybe not. Or maybe they were in the carriage already when they got shot up when they were trying to escape.
Maybe, but there was no driver. I guess the carriage driver could have gotten
shot off. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They were coming from whatever.
It was just weird.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't really explained.
Yeah. I think it would have been better if it was Angel Eyes who did this. Here's a critique I have for this movie.
Well, here's the problem with that.
Yeah.
If Angel Eyes has done it, he would have the information.
Well, that too. Ideally. Maybe he, like, bamboozled them or, like, that's not his character. Like, he was not going to just do that out of nowhere.
It would
come up to him. Yeah. But I think his character wasn't, like, he's just gone for most of the movie.
He is gone. Actually, Clint Eastwood's not even in this as much as you would
think. It's a lot of Tuco, which is cool. I'm fine with Tuco.
Yeah, I mean, Tuco gets the most build. I mean, and I guess the other two are just played up to be more mysterious.
Yeah, but I think the villains, too, are, I guess, is he the villain, I guess?
Tuco? I don't think...
No, Angel Eyes.
I think he's supposed... Oh, Angel Eyes is definitely the villain in this.
Well, I think Angel Eyes is, like, not utilized enough.
No, he's not in it enough.
To be, like, a presence to be like, oh, you gotta watch out for this guy. Be like,
we are. But I think they were building up Tuco because they wanted... Because he's supposed to be, like... Really, this isn't the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is light, dark, and gray.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I think they wanted to build him, his character up, because we get backstory and everything for Tuco.
Oh, yeah, and I loved it.
But yeah, so we're building all up, and it comes to find out that, you know, there's this buried treasure. Tuco gets half of the... gets told half of it while he's going to get water to make sure the guy doesn't die. Clint gets...
Other half.
And the other half of the thing. So now Tuco's got to keep him alive, and there's a partnership. And then the second act is them going pretty much traveling together and then getting captured by Angel Eyes in the Confederacy. And in a union camp. I'm sorry. And
they get captured by the union because they're mimicking Confederate soldiers. They're cosplaying as Confederate soldiers. That's why they get
captured. So they get captured, and then of course, this brings Angel Eyes to the mix, who torches the information out of Tuco. Then Angel Eyes and Clint team up, and then the third act is them getting the treasure, and of course, Clint gets the treasure, and, well, Clint and Tuco split the treasure, and Levi and Cleve gets murdered in
a great standoff.
In a great standoff.
A little drawn out, but still good.
Yeah. That's the overall plot of everything. Now we can just talk about the different things in the movies that we liked and
Oh, the acting's fantastic. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, all the acting in this. The last standoff, though a little long, kind of iconic now,
yes, I would say. Yes.
I mean, that's where all standoffs come from, I'm assuming, from now on. Like the three-way Mexican standoff kind of way.
Yes. That's inspired of the whole Mexican standoff. The character motivation and development. Phenomenal, TJ. It's just so good. Like Tuco with his brother, his real brother, not his fake brothers.
Right. And, you know, the sympathy drawn there. You can see, like, even Clint's character development throughout the movie is just, he's going to look out, he's looking out for himself.
Yeah, a lot of self-preservation for sure.
But he's also not above doing a kind thing for people.
No. And what I liked about him is like, yeah, he like him, what motivated, like, okay, him and Tuco work together at the beginning, right? And then after, like, he's logical, like, okay, I can only get $3,000 out of you mostly. So we go part ways and do our thing. And he does it in a civil fair way. Backstabbing Tuco, sure, but does it in a civil way. Tuco gets his revenge and backstabbing.
I don't know if he does it in a civil way. He kind of leaves him tied up in the desert and makes him walk 70 miles to a town.
Well, because he knows Tuco was accused of all those crimes. Like, this guy's a criminal. Can't forget that. It's still going to be nice enough for him, like, he can get to back to a place.
Still screwed him over pretty bad.
For sure, but you have your fair share of money. I'm not taking your money. I'm not a thief. And
well, no, he kept $3,000.
Oh, true. He did get the $3,000. But the other money, you know, is yours. Well, I'm letting you live. So that's a fair deal.
Yeah.
I could have killed you at that when they were hanging you and still kept the money. So you're alive because of me. And I go my way. Tuco gets his revenge, which is fair. Like, Tuco's revenge is totally fair.
The only problem I have with Tuco's revenge in this is it made Clint's character look stupid.
Stupid how?
Because, one, he gets caught in his room, which is a cool scene where he uses the bad guys and he sees out through the window, which is fine, and that's fine. He gets out by a cannon falling down. But then he knows Tuco's still following him.
And yet does his thing,
so. And so he goes back to his thing and allows Tuco to sneak up on him a second time.
I thought that was weird, too. And so I was thinking to myself, maybe there's days or weeks between the Tuco catching back up to him again. Because we can't know what a patch of time in this movie.
Well, they keep showing Tuco finding Clint's cans, and he keeps finding the cigars, and then he finally finds one that's still, like, hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he can still smoke the cigar, so we know he's close by. But he should have known that Tuco was still after him because he barely escaped him last time.
Yeah, but if you can worry about Tuco all you want, but he's still doing his schemes. I guess he's good, unless he wants to be paranoid the whole time, and, like, he's not a vengeful character. So he's like,
no, but like, it just seemed like he wasn't even like prepared at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he was just caught completely off guard.
Yeah.
It just made him seem a little stupid.
No, and I agree with that. I was just trying to like figure out ways to justify it. But I mostly do agree with you.
I mean, you can argue that he's still a younger version of the character he's supposed to be. And he's came up with this plan, first of all.
Yes.
So it's like he's portrayed as a smart guy throughout the entire movie. It just seemed like a moment of idiocy that didn't make sense.
No, for sure. I agree. But after Tuco gets his revenge on Clint, I like that Clint doesn't try to get revenge on Tuco. He's just wary of Tuco, but he's like, I don't need to keep one-upping you on revenge. Like, that's...
Well, no, because...
We're fair. We're equal.
Yeah, we're even now.
It's just like I see that so often, like, now I have to get my revenge. Like, no, you don't. You guys are even. So I'm glad that he didn't have that mindset. Like,
usually with those movies, it's the guys involved hate each other.
Yes.
And I never got the impression these guys hated each other. They were just like, they're similar, they're scoundrels in similar ways. They just have a little bit different and moral ambiguity.
Yes. Like, Tuco was all about the money and about himself for the most part. Whereas Clint is still a general nice guy, kind of.
Yeah, he will help you. He's not gonna let you hang.
No, he doesn't ever. Yeah. But I did like the character development and all that. But I do wish the bad guy was more of a presence. Like, he's just like shows up like out of like when they get to the prison camp, like, oh, he's just there.
Yeah, but I think they were going for more of an odd couple kind of thing with Tuco and Clinton this one.
Oh, I'm fine with that.
So, like, I think that was what they were going for, because it does, you can tell they're, it's a still kind of comedic.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
Yes.
So, I took it more along that way.
Yeah.
Like, but there are like certain plot points that that doesn't make sense for the for Angel Eyes in this. Like, he's a Union soldier, and then there's this captain in the camp who's like, "I'm gonna get live long enough to see you go to jail." And I'm like, "Why is that scene even here?"
Yeah, and I think it's because, again, my headcanon is maybe Angel Eyes did kill the carriage crew and somehow got the Union soldier outfit and was faking it being a Union soldier.
But like they all recognize him as Union soldier.
Exactly. So that's where I like was confused. Like, is he a Union soldier?
Just I think he was a Union bounty? Soldier. I think he's a Union soldier, but he goes off script, essentially. And that's why that one injured captain, when they were in the Union camps, like, I'm going to live long enough to put you all in jail.
And that makes sense. That's fair. It's just, I felt like happenstance that the Angel or the other two just happened to be, like, it felt coincidental that they all kept bumping into each other. Like, I wanted the bad guy to be more like orchestrating and like making it happen.
Yeah. I will say one thing, that the movie is a little too stylistic.
Oh, yeah? You think so?
Yeah, we already talked about it. Like, when Tuca's running around the cemetery for like 4 hours and the camera's just spinning. It's like, this is not even good cinema at this point because my eyes are hurting.
Exactly. It's like, especially the 3 hours into the movie, like, we're almost done. Let's not do this, guys.
Why are we dragging this out? Yeah. Like, come on.
I get you're trying to show like it's a massive cemetery. He doesn't know where to start. I get you trying to show that, but...
But you already showed us a large sweeping shot of it. We don't need another one.
Exactly. But that being said, like, there are a lot of shots in this that are very inspiring. Like, every time they had a noose on screen, like, the way they would stage a noose and, like, storytelling-wise, I'm like, this is good. This is really good. But yeah, there's a lot of good in this movie. I cannot bitch about much in this movie.
No, there's not a lot to complain about. I mean, this movie is long, but I didn't feel it.
No, I was entertaining from beginning to end.
Like, I was enthralled the entire time, and I was like, yeah, let's get to the end of this. Yes. You know what I mean?
The Union soldiers, when they're covered in dust, coming up to them. Like, that's good.
Yeah, because they think they're Confederate soldiers. It's perfect.
This is fantastic. I think I talked about this off mic, but like the whole sympathy for the Union or Confederacy, I appreciate it. It's really good. I see the other side of it. I definitely get it. But it was like, it's kind of too much.
Yeah. Like we say, this definitely feels like a foreigner looking at an art history. Like, we would look at someone else's foreign history and say, yeah, both sides have their points. You know what I mean?
Like, the Nazis weren't that bad, guys. Like,
No,
they're the Nazis.
Yeah. If you go in Germany, I don't even think they're allowed to say Nazi in Germany.
And I get like brothers fighting brothers in the Civil War. I get it. Like, it's war. People suffer, but slavery is not cool.
Yeah, it was about, well, I mean, it's more than slavery, but it was slavery. That was what everyone says it's about, slavery.
Yeah, it's slavery.
Not that everything that the Union did.
Exactly, and I do
before, during, and after was perfect. Not at all. Yes. It led to some disastrous things, but like the overall win, I would say was worth it.
Yeah. Yes. Like, I'm here talking to you right now, so like, it's a win for me. But,
Like, another thing is the North won. The Union won. So, you know what that makes the Confederacy?
Oh, God. What?
Traitors.
Yeah, and losers.
They're traitors to America. They are literally evil in our eyes, essentially, because they lost.
And the way we handle it, like, I guess it's okay for us to be like, not a big deal. Come back to us. So, like, that's cool, but I think we should have punished them more for the shit. Because you would think, right? But
I mean, technically, they're all traitors. I'm not actually sure at what the aftermath of everything was. They didn't really cover that, and I didn't ever went out of my way to find out.
I looked it up. I'd haven't retained much of the info, but I know that's like, it's like, let black guys be got bygones. We're Americans. Let's not have too much strife between us.
And technically, they're traitors, and they should have probably, at least the leaders should have been hung. Like, I don't know what happened to General Lee, but he should have probably been hung.
I recall he like had a little jail time after that, but like, yeah, you think he should have been hung, but no.
Because technically, he betrayed the United States of America.
I agree. But see, this is controversial to say for some reason for some people. But no, they are traitors. That flag is a traitorous, rebellious flag.
Traitors.
Yes.
That's why it's treason is like the most grievous crime you can commit against a country.
I agree. And that's why I think like them trying to downplay the North was kind of bad too. Like, yes, but nowadays people are like so sympathetic for the South. Like, no.
Yeah, well, that's just for racism reasons.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, no, guys. Anyways, the movie, it's good. Besides the whole, I do like the sympathy for the South aspect because there's a lot of like propaganda and shit to like push down on them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because like the North, like we said, North is like the whole issue we have with our banking system these days. Yeah. North's fault.
Yes, there's a lot of shit that North did not do well. That's, our system right now is f***ed in many aspects because of this, how we handle shit.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So,
not saying the South would have done better.
No, the South would have done horribly worse. Exactly. So, but you know, yeah. There was no winning on either side.
No. But the black people are freed, so that's something, guys.
Like I said, take the win where you can get it.
And all the years of segregation afterwards. But yeah, woo! Civil rights. Women can vote too now, but they don't have the right
to vote. They got the vote before black people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, that's why, yeah, but they can't have abortions now anymore, so.
They can't what?
Have abortions in some states now, because shit.
Yeah, because the theocracy yes. that these people are trying to push on through this country.
Anyways, this movie, guys, is so good. Want to get to the ratings of this movie?
Yeah, let's get to the ratings of this movie. Okay. You go first.
I had a hard time with this one, TJ, because I had a really hard time. Because this movie is really good. It is. Mm-hmm. Like my only complaint about this movie, it's slightly long with some scenes, and I wish the villain was more. But besides that, what's to complain about in this movie?
I couldn't find any.
Right?
Well, I have one complaint.
Oh, do you? Want to say it now before I review?
No, I've been saving it for my number.
This movie's too good. This movie's way too good. It's like, it's not fair how good this movie is. This movie, like, there were so many scenes I was just, like, pausing and just looking at myself, like, this is inspiring and just a good movie. It makes me want to make movies again. Like, this is, like, Jesus Christ. This is so good. So, like, the last one I gave, what, an 8 or a 9, I think?
A 9, depending on this
Yeah, movie. So that one's a 9. This has got to be a 10. This is better than, like, this is a series I got better and better with each movie.
Oh, there's one thing I did want to talk about before the ratings.
Yeah.
Soundtrack.
Yeah. How we forget about that?
Yeah. I mean, soundtrack so is good. And they did a callback to the last movie during the standoff.
Yeah, you saw that, which, right?
Yeah. I noticed it because that was my favorite part of the last movie. Yeah. So good, the soundtrack.
So, like, everything about this movie is like, yeah, this is why movies are good. Like, I wish they would make movies again like this. Like, this is so... If they made a 3-hour movie now like this, like, yeah, I want to sit down and watch it. This is a 10 out of 10. Like, even the flaws that this movie has, if any, are just like, whatever. They're minute to the overall grandness of this movie. It's a 10. 10 out of 10. Perfect movie. I recommend watching it. And it's like, it's broken down in a way, like, because they bumble through sections. Like, they'll go to a bridge and do things to the bridge. They'll go to the prison camp. Like, you can pause the movie whenever you want at those sections and pick back up. So it's digestible if you want to watch it in segments. So yeah,
right.
10 out of 10 movie for me.
So I was the same way. I gave the last one a 9, depending on this one.
Yeah.
And thinking whether this one's going to be better or worse. My issue with this movie is that it is too long.
Yes.
And you could have completely cut out the entire bridge section of this movie.
I liked it, though, but I agree.
But it's completely superfluous to the whole thing. It's literally, they're on the way to the cemetery, and then all of a sudden we're diverted for like 20 minutes to this battle scene that the cemetery is directly across from. So it feels like it's just interrupted the entire plot.
I agree, and I know it's funny because I was thinking the same thing. I watched it, like, this scene's pointless, but then the explosion happened, like, oh, that's an intense explosion. And so, like, that's for
not that it's a bad scene. No. It's a great scene. It would have been a fantastic scene in a war movie.
I think this scene had to exist to justify why the budget was so high. Like, we need to blow something up, guys.
Maybe.
It can't be.
And it also gave a reason for Clint to be a good guy, to make the captain feel, you know, worth something.
Yeah, so another reason to give him a good guy status.
Yeah. So, but that the fact that scene
wait, he's a good guy after stealing the gurney from a dead soul, dying soldier.
Yeah, I know.
I just took that from a dying person. That's kind of fucked up.
But yeah, That was my major issue. That last little section there in the movie is just too long.
Yeah.
But I found myself in a position that I think I was going to be in. I don't think this movie is better or worse than the last movie. I think it's just as good.
Oh, fascinating. Okay.
Because of the length and the...
Yeah.
I think it was that same. So I think what I have to end up doing is make both this movie and the last one both 10 out of 10s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because, like I said, last one, this is the kind of movie that is what I think these movies should be.
Yes.
That's what a 10 out of 10. This is my standards. And this one live up to that standard of that.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, I think I'm bumping the last one to a 10 out of 10, and this one is a 10 out of 10.
Can't be mad at that, because that's a fair assessment.
Though I think I did like the last one just a little better, personally.
Yeah, I think I liked the villain more in that last one, and that drove me more.
I like the soundtrack, yeah, but the watch, that tune,
yes,
really sticks with yes. me, and still does, so... That's why I think I like that one just a little bit more. But yeah, I'm out of 10.
Yeah, no, it's a solid series. It's a very solid series. If I get the first one a 7, which I don't think I did, there's no way. I'd retroactively give that a 8.
Actually,
maybe a 9, honestly.
I think if I didn't do it, I'm retroactively giving the first one a 9.
Yeah, like I would give, okay, this is how we're judging the series now, 9, 9, 10 for me.
Mine's a 9, 10.
Yeah. Like, these are just good movies.
Yeah, I'm glad we covered them.
Yeah. I've seen these before. I just forgot how good they were.
Like, I was, like, watching them for the first time all over again. So, it was... I mean, I didn't... When I first watched them, I wasn't watching them critically. No. So, you know what I mean? I was just watching them because, hey, I've never seen these movies before. Yeah. So now looking at them critically, yeah, they're fantastic movies.
It's weird because, like, just comparing them to modern cinema and, like, the advances we made, the fact that these are still so good says a lot.
Here's the thing that I think
is,
I think they had to try back then. I don't think people try anymore. They got so many tricks and things they can rely on to get things done. It's like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's like fixing a pose, use CGI, or let's just copy that shot or scene. It's like, where's the inspiration? Yeah,
but there's passion in this movie. So, and I think that's what's missing nowadays is just passion.
And to be fair, I know the first one copied in a foreign film. So, but even then, like this movie, like these, they just get good. They're just good. God.
Yeah.
And I guess Hollywood gave them budgets to these movies. Like, I feel like there are stories out there that have not been told yet that are motivating like this.
But I'm not saying all movies. I'm saying like
the majority or the big ones or
the blockbusters. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Anything that costs $300 million to make.
Because they got to make their money back. So they got to be safe enough to make money back, sadly.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I'm sure there are art house films. I haven't seen one that you've introduced me to yet, but I'm sure there are good ones out there.
Yeah, there are, but, like, they've become too art housey. Like,
I'm hoping the next one that you're going to expose me to is good, but we'll see.
It probably won't be. But, yeah, because they get too much up of their ass. This is not up its ass at all. It's just, like, a good story.
Yeah.
Good character. No. It's just good characters. Fun characters to be invested in. Yeah. Watch it, guys. Yeah. Watch it. Watch the series in any order you want. I would say this one for last. I think this one set the bar too high.
Yeah, I think you should watch it in order just because you just not because the story requires it, just to see the advances they make from movie to movie.
Yes, and this way you can see like this is more polished cinematically. Like the camera movements are better. Yes. Just like it's not as shiny in your face, but like you can tell the budget's higher for sure.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So, but yeah,
I mean, just the makeup when they're dehydrated is good. Like Clint looks disgusting at points.
Yeah, flies on his face. Like, I'm thinking like did they put like dry meat on his face to do this? Like,
no, I think that had to be an accident.
Yeah, probably.
Fly thing.
But they kept that shit in there. I like it.
Yeah, they're like, oh, fly lit on his feet. That's awesome. Yeah. Leave that in there.
It's good. It's good. I can't praise this movie enough, DJ. I really can't.
No, I know. It's a great movie. Go watch it.
Yeah, that's almost kissing this movie's ass.
Yeah.
Hold on. And end.